Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org.
Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live, coming at you on a Monday, the Feast of St. Clair. Happy Feast of St. Clair, everybody. To all the Clairs out there listening, happy feast day. And to all the listeners out there, thank you for tuning in today for 2 hours of answering the strongest objections to God. That is the topic that we are going to have on the show today. If you would like to get in on the conversation, the number to call is 888-318-7884. That's 888-318-7884. To talk about objections to God's existence, obviously, the main person to ask a question about that would be probably an atheist or an agnostic. You don't have to be an atheist or an agnostic. You could also be a Catholic, a Christian, someone of any sort of background of beliefs. But if you have this objection in your mind that you just don't know how to answer for yourself, or if you've been presented with an objection to God's existence by someone else and you don't know how to answer it, give us a call and we will try to get to your questions soon in the show. But answering those questions and, of course, taking us through a few before we get to calls is our very own Catholic Answers staff apologist, our author, speaker, and I would say resident Thomist, probably resident philosopher of Catholic Answers. Among all the apologists, probably the most Thomistic inclined. I'll stop keeping you waiting. It's Dr. Carla Broussard. Carla, welcome back to the show.
Hey Thomas, I'll embrace that label, man. I'll wear it proudly.
I think a place like Catholic Answers needs someone who will wear that label because, as we'll see in a moment, getting into some of these objections to God's existence, it really requires a really careful, sharp, analytic mind that can dissect and take apart the objections that we're going to tackle here with the kind of precision and clarity that Thomas exhibited.
Yeah, we'll give it a shot. I'll do my best to think through some of the issues posed that we have teed up, but also from whatever issues are posed to us by our callers who call in today, whether atheist, agnostic, or, as you mentioned, a believer who's struggling with a particular objection that they're trying to work through. More than happy to take those calls. I will say that these issues, a little forewarning for our listeners, these issues do involve some philosophical thinking. And so it does stretch the mind a tad bit, and we engage in some intellectual calisthenics. But I will do my best to present the answers to the questions and refuting some of the objections in a way that is digestible for the popular audience listening. So just a little forewarning of that. And I will say this. I did not pick this topic. The team picked it. So for whatever philosophical headiness that comes out of my mouth, do not blame me. You blame the CA team.
Okay.
Carlo, I just had to make that disclaimer, man.
Carlo clearing the air right here. But I know you're excited to get into it because nothing – I see you when you talk about these things. Nothing really gets your juices flowing more than when we really dive into the heady arguments.
Yeah, I do enjoy engaging this field or branch of apologetics, what we call philosophical apologetics. I wrote my dissertation for my doctorate in philosophy within this field of natural theology. So I very much appreciate these issues, and I appreciate the objections and the challenges because it does force the believer to really think about these issues in a very careful and clear way. And it prompts us to get a better understanding of our own beliefs concerning God.
Yeah, and I have also found that that number one, that's very much true. That when you have to work the mind a little bit to understand the doctrines of Christianity, it is very rewarding when you finally figure that out. But also, it can prompt a greater love of God when you understand better the reasons why we believe in Him and what He actually is, what we do and don't believe about Him. That can prompt a much greater love and devotion for God. And that's really what the exercise of theology and apologetics should all be directed towards, right?
Thomas, man, you're singing my song here, brother. I would love eventually, one day, to write a book on the pastoral implications of apologetics. And one of the chapters would involve philosophical apologetics and how whenever we come to a deeper philosophical understanding of who and what God is, as classically conceived, as pure existence itself, pure actuality itself, and his absolute perfection of not being bound or limited in any way, it has major implications for us pastorally. Like, just for example, when you consider that God is more intimate to us than we are to ourselves, insofar as being the creator and the source of all being, he is the very cause of my existence. So he doesn't cause me by acting on me from the outside, like I'm acting or causing you to hear me right now by acting on you from the outside. Rather, God causes us from within, because he is the source of our very existence, which is the most inner aspect of my very reality and my very being. And so when we come to understand that, we see that even God, from a philosophical perspective, is intimate to us, close to us, closer than we could possibly even imagine, because conceiving God as the source of my very being is something that goes beyond the boundaries of our imagination. We literally can't imagine anything that would be that intimate to us, because it's going beyond the boundaries of physical reality. And whenever you think through that, you say, you come to the conclusion, well, man, God is intimate to me, even insofar as he is creator, more intimate to me than anything else. And then we push that a little further. And once you understand that my very existence here and now, at every moment I exist, is ultimately dependent on this creator, the source of my very being and existence, well, then that leads me to a sense of gratitude. I come to realize how radically dependent I am upon God for my existence, and that prompts me, motivates me, moves me to have gratitude, to say thanks to the creator for actually sustaining me in existence at every moment I exist, a sustaining of existence for which I have nothing to contribute. Literally nothing. So to quote St. Paul here, to mesh theology and philosophy, there is nothing for me to boast insofar as I am existing. It is entirely God. And also, it's gratuitous. It's a gift. There's nothing I do to demand a right to exist right here and right now from God, but yet he sustains me in being. And so you can see how the philosophical understanding of God as the source of all being outside of himself and the cause of my existence here and now at every moment I exist leads and has pastoral implications, can move me spiritually to relate to the creator in a proper way.
Beautifully said, Carlo. Thank you for that. And we will... I think that really paves some of the groundwork for what we'll get into in a little bit with these questions, as some of the attributes of God that you were naming there are going to help us clear the air when we answer some of the questions that we're about to get into. Before we do that, I do want to clear something else up for any listeners. Carlo has been saying my name, Thomas. That is because I am not Cy Kellett, as you may have noticed. Cy is out today. He is on vacation, going back to his hometown of Boston. He will be back shortly tomorrow. Will he be back tomorrow? When's Cy going to be back? Cy will be back Wednesday, so you'll have to deal with me and then another fill-in host tomorrow. I'm sure we'll do the best we can. Pray for Cy and his travels, that he will be back with us before you know it. And second thing to clear up is I mentioned that Carlo was a Thomist, and then I mentioned another Thomas. I wasn't talking about myself. There's no philosophical school named after me. Thank goodness. We'd be in a really sorry way if there was. Of course, I was referring to St. Thomas Aquinas, the famous, yeah. You know, probably, depending on who you ask, the greatest theologian of all time. Just that, you know, no big deal. Carlo, of course, as a Thomist, you know, he's going to draw heavily from St. Thomas's work and school of thought and everything. And that's rather appropriate because he's very well known, probably most well known, for demonstrating God's existence in five different ways, just in one article of his great work, the Summa Theologiae. So with that ready to go, I think we can dive into what St. Thomas thought was probably the strongest objection to God's existence. Yeah. It's rather telling that when Thomas takes up the question of does God exist, of whether God exists, he begins by giving this objection. He thinks that this is about as good as it gets. If God exists, then there'd be no evil in the world, whether sin or suffering, because if he was all good and all powerful, he'd eliminate any evil. I think the way God puts it is if God's infinitely good, then the opposite of that infinite thing can't exist. It would just be utterly annihilated. But if we look around, we see there's evil. Therefore, open and shut case, God doesn't exist.
Yeah. So in response, I think it's important to highlight the hidden premise or the hidden assumption within that argument. Namely, one who has the power to eliminate evil must do so. Otherwise, that agent is not good. Now, I argue that's a false assumption. And so the question becomes, well, why is it false? Well, there are a few ways in which we can answer that question and go about this. And the first of which, Thomas, is that the obligation to eliminate evil arises if and only if the elimination of evil is due in justice. All right. So when it comes to elimination of, you know, so the question, all right, so why is it that it is not unjust or is permitted for God to permit? Why is it reasonable for God to permit the presence of evil, whether in moral form, that would be sin, or physical form, right? Like suffering and evils within nature, blindness or defects and corruption and death. Well, think about this. Moral evil arises from our finitude as a finite rational agent, right? So think about this, Thomas. Only God is his ultimate perfection. Only God is his ultimate life's goal. It's himself. Every other rational being apart from God, like you and me, rational agents and even angels, we have to make choices in order to achieve our perfection, our goal, our end, right? And so with that nature as a finite rational agent, there comes the possibility of missing the mark and failing to achieve our goal and our perfection. And so, given the fact that moral evil is arising from the finitude, right, the limitations of us being rational agents, when God permits moral evil, it's consistent with who we are as a defectible creature, right? So, like, it's part of being a finite rational agent to be defectible. It's part of our nature to have the potential to miss the mark in doing good. I think that's pretty clear. Well, consider this. God is not bound to prevent a defectible creature from defecting, right? So God is not bound to prevent me from failing to miss the mark in my behavior. God is not bound to prevent me from choosing bad things. Why? Because the potential or the possibility of me choosing bad things is part of my nature as a finite, rational agent. I ain't God. And I think that's pretty obvious. And so I have to choose things in order to be perfect. Well, with that comes the possibility to choose things bad for me and lead away from my perfection. And so God is not bound to prevent me, a defectible creature, from defecting. And so, again, the elimination of evil, the obligation to eliminate evil, would arise if and only if the elimination of evil is due in justice. But God is not bound in justice to eliminate even moral evil. Now, what about physical evil? Well, think about this, Thomas. Physical evil, like defects within material beings, maybe somebody's born blind, we have corruption where plants die outside, right? Leaves die, trees die, grass dies. Well, it's part and parcel of corporeal material beings to be subject to defect. To be subject to all of these defects we see, which would include suffering for living things, plant, animals, and human beings. Thus, the permission of such defects is consistent with those defectible natures. And remember the principle, God is not bound to prevent defectible creatures from defect. And so to say that God is bound to prevent or eliminate all evil would be to say that God is bound to do something to us that would be over and above our nature, to give us something that would be basically a grace. But God is not bound in justice to give us something over and above our nature. And so therefore, we can conclude, Thomas, that God is not bound to eliminate all evil, whether moral or physical. Again, to quote the maxim, God is not bound to prevent a defectible creature from defecting. Whether that defect is a moral defect, like I'm failing to miss the mark of achieving my perfection and choosing good things, or whether that defect is simply a material being having privations within its nature, like suffering or corrupting and then eventually death. God is not bound to prevent a defectible creature from defect. So the permission of evil is consistent with our natures as a finite, rational agent, a rational agent that's not God, and our nature as a material being. And this is why it's not, God is not bound in justice to eliminate all evils. And if that's the case, Thomas, if God is not bound in justice to eliminate all evils, then his permission of evil, whether moral or physical, is not evidence against his goodness. The permission can still be consistent with his goodness. So that's at least one way to go about it. I realize that's kind of deep, but that's sort of getting at the sort of the foundational principles as to why God's permission of evil, whether moral or physical, does not count against his goodness.
Mm-hmm. And and that's a great way to start off by getting right into the heart of the matter on that problem of evil question. I realize and that is, though, only half of the answer, as it turns out.
Yes.
And we have to go to a break now, but when we do come back, I do want to dig into the second half of the answer, because there is more that can be said on the problem of evil, and I think should be said, because it is probably the toughest nut to crack for most people who object to God's existence. So we will get into that right after this break. Before we go to that break, I do want to tell you real quick that if you like a bargain, make sure you get on over to shop.catholic.com right now and take advantage of the final day today, the final day of our Book Lovers $10 book sale. 40 of our very best titles, just $10. Don't procrastinate. This deal ends at midnight tonight. Midnight tonight, Pacific time, I believe. So 9 p.m. Eastern. No, sorry, not 9 p.m. Eastern. It's the other way around. Is it the other way around? I'm totally messing up. Carlos' philosophy messed up my time zones. Whatever, midnight tonight, don't gamble. If you think it might end at a different time, don't think that way. Shop.catholic.com, 40 of our very best titles for just $10. That's shop.catholic.com. We'll be right back after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily Mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at Magnificat.com.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with a gospel message. You can enjoy EWTN live TV and radio streams, EWTN news, program schedules, prayers, and devotionals with the EWTN app. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. My name is Thomas Graff, the social media manager here at Catholic Answers, taking a break from that duty just for this afternoon to fill in for Cy Kellett, who is on vacation. We'll be back with us on Wednesday. Joining me is our staff apologist, author, speaker, podcaster, Carlo Broussard. Dr. Carlo Broussard, of course, is probably the best person to bring on for this show, which is refuting the strongest atheist arguments, the strongest objections to God's existence. And Carlo, before we went to the break, we were getting through probably the most important objection, probably the one that is the strongest objection for many, many atheists, and probably even the strongest concept to struggle with for many believers, which is the problem of evil, which is, if God exists, why does evil exist? And so you got through the first answer about how God is not does not owe injustice to prevent a defectible creature from defecting, from doing that. You did a pretty good job explaining that, but that is only half of the answer, or that is only one of the answers that we could give, right? So what is another way that we could answer the problem of evil?
Yeah, and first of all, for our listeners' sake, we got to reestablish what's the target that we're going after here. The target that we're going after is a hidden assumption embedded within this objection from the problem of evil. You know, if God were all good and all powerful, then, you know, he would not permit evil. Like, he's bound in justice to eliminate all evil. That's the assumption. One who has the power to eliminate evil must eliminate all evil. Now, as you pointed out, the first response there is that, well, no, not necessarily, because God is not bound in justice to eliminate all evil, because his permission of evil, whether moral or physical, is consistent with the natures of the things that are experiencing the evils. For us as rational agents other than God, right? We're defectible rational agents, so we can morally defect. So God's permission of the moral defect is consistent with our nature. And even as physical beings, whether for us as human beings, the plant or the animal, God's permission of physical evil is consistent with the nature of physical beings. And so consequently, it is not an injustice. He's not doing something bad for permitting these defects within these sorts of creatures. Now, the second answer as to the question of, or the second critique of the assumption, one who has the power must eliminate all evil, is that that's not necessarily true if there is a good to be achieved by permitting the evil. So if there is a good to be achieved by permitting the evil, then there's no injustice for permitting the evil. And so here's an example, Thomas. So I have, like, for whatever reason in Providence, a weak stomach. When I see blood, I get woozy, man. That happens to me quite often. And so consequently, whenever one of my kids gets some sort of deep cut and blood coming out, and there is a need to clean the wound with peroxide, guess who does the cleaning? My wife does. I do not. And as my wife cleans the wound, she is inflicting pain, suffering, aversion, or a form of physical evil upon my child whom I love. And I, as the father, have the power to stop my wife from inflicting such evil upon my children as I stand at the threshold of the door, viewing and peeking over her shoulder as to what she's doing. Now I ask you, Thomas, am I a bad father? Is my permission of the inflicting of the evil contrary to justice? Does this make me a bad person?
It does not. No. I mean, to the child, it might seem that way.
Yeah, right. That's right. And the reason why, I think we can all reasonably agree, it would not make me a bad father, is because we all intuitively recognize there is a greater good that my permission of the inflicted physical evil is going to lead to. So if there is a good to be achieved by permitting an evil, well, then there is no injustice in permitting that evil. Now, what that good might be in relation to God permitting evil, whether moral or physical, within our lives, well, sometimes we don't know exactly what that good is, but we shouldn't even expect to know what that good is, especially when you have an infinite creator who knows all things past, present, and future, and even all possible things, and has an access to knowledge of what a future good might be that he will bring about that I simply do not have access to. And so just because I might not be able to see a future good that could be brought about from a permitted evil, it doesn't follow that there is no good. Now, that good may very well be a future good that God will bring about from the permitted evil. But also, there can just simply be the good of the created whole. That is to say, the good of the manifestation of the finitude of rational agents like myself, right? When I defect, Thomas, when I fail to miss the mark.
It seems like we might have.
Sorry,
Carlo, we lost you. We lost you a second there. You were just saying when you defect, when you fail to meet the mark, then we lost you.
Okay, let me try to repeat that. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we have you.
All right, so my failure to miss, my missing the mark, my defect when it comes to morality and a failure to do appropriate human behavior, that's actually a manifestation of the limitations of my agency, to be a rational agent. It's actually a manifestation of my creatureliness, right? So that manifestation of the limitation of my freedom, of my rational agency, say, could be a good that God wills to preserve and manifest within the created order as a whole. Whenever you have material beings defecting, well, they're functioning as material beings. And that could be a good in and of itself. So we can see that there are some goods that God might bring about and some goods that God might want to manifest from creaturely beings.
All right. That is two great answers from Dr. Carlo Broussard to the problem of evil. And we're just getting started here on this refuting atheist objection. So we'll be right back to tackle more right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Each Catholic is obliged to spread and defend the faith by word and deed. Well, we're here to help. Join special guests Chris Stefanik, Dr. David Anders, Steve Dawson, and all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists this September 25th through 28th in beautiful San Diego for the Catholic Answers Conference. Our theme? Go make disciples. Enjoy 4 days of faith, fun, and fellowship. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers, and now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We are refuting the strongest atheist arguments today on Catholic Answers Live. My name is Thomas Graff. I am the social media manager here at Catholic Answers most of the time, but from time to time I do fill in for Cy Kellett when he's off for one reason or another. That's what I'm doing today as I host today's show with Carlo Broussard, Dr. Carlo Broussard. I got to keep remembering to add that title, Carlo. You earned it, so I'm not gonna take it away from you publicly like that. Dr. Carlo Broussard is joining us today to refute these atheist arguments, arguments against the existence of God. And by the way, in our second hour, we will be getting into hopefully some callers' questions. So if you do want to join the conversation, maybe add on your thoughts to something Carlo says or present your own argument that we don't cover, give us a call at 888-318-7884. That's 888-318-7884. As I said, though. We'll probably get into more of those in the second hour, because we do want to spend the first hour covering some of the really strong objections, so that, you know, we can live up to the title, to the title of the show that we presented today, refuting the strongest atheist arguments. And so we've gone through, I think, what most would call the strongest atheist argument, the strongest argument against the existence of God, which is the problem of evil. Now, you gave some great, thorough answers to that, Carlo, but there is a variant of the question that we still haven't covered.
Right.
So the first question was basically a question about just God's mere existence. So if God exists, there can't be evil, but there is evil, and so he can't exist. That's just a straight, open-shut question about his existence considered in itself, and you did a great job answering that, as I said. But there's another way that this could be formulated. Still a variant of the problem of evil, but it gets to one of God's attributes, which an attribute is just something we can say about God, something that describes him. And one way we would describe him, I think a lot of people who agree on the definition of God would agree that God is considered to be all good, right? All good, all loving. So if God is all good, and if he created everything, so that's two attributes, all good and creates everything that exists.
Yeah.
Why would evil exist in the world? Wouldn't that mean that God created evil, in which case he actually isn't all good? So now we have a question that's not so much saying evil disproves the existence of God wholesale, but it rather disproves the idea of God being all good.
Well, I would actually say that this version or formulation of the argument from evil does indeed attack the very existence of God.
Okay.
So generally speaking, you know, if God exists, evil wouldn't exist. Evil exists, therefore God doesn't exist. But the first version that we looked at was an attack against God's permission of evil. Like, if God existed, he would not permit evil to be a part of our reality. This particular version of it is attacking God as the creator. God being all good, which is part and parcel of the classical view of God, would not create evil, right? And so the assumption here is that evil is something that's a part of our reality. It's a thing that's existing, so it's argued. And since God creates all things, it would follow that God created evil. So notice the attack is a little bit nuanced here in attacking God as the creator of evil. And if he's creating evil, then it can't be all good. So you can see a distinction between the two lines of argumentation, each of which fall under the broader umbrella of what is called the logical problem of evil. But in response, I've already hinted at it as to the problem of the objection, namely viewing evil as a thing existing. But whenever we reflect upon evil philosophically, Thomas, we come to see that evil is not something like you're there, I'm here, the computer's here, the microphone's here, these things that exist. Evil is not like that. Rather, evil is what philosophers call a privation. Now you think it to yourself, what in the world does that mean? Well, that simply means a lack of a due good, given the kind of thing it is. A lack of what ought to be there, given the kind of thing that it is. It's not just a lack of good. Like, for example, Thomas, the tree outside. Do we say that it's bad or evil that the tree can't see outside?
No, I don't think so. I don't think trees are the kind of things that ought to see. Something's gone very wrong
exactly,
if that's the case.
Exactly, right. So whenever we look outside and we say, well, the tree can't see, we don't conclude, oh, that's an evil. Why? Because the lack of the good of seeing, it's not a lack of what ought to be there. It's not a lack of a do good. It's a lack of a good, yeah, sure. But it's not a lack of a do good, given the kind of thing it is. However, if I can't see, would you call that lack of sight a defect or evil?
Yes, I would.
Yes, and the reason is because I'm the kind of thing that ought to be able to see. So evil, whether it be physical evil, like lack of sight in the thing that should be seeing, or even moral evil, whenever there is a lack of due order, whenever I engage in a behavior that's lacking a proper order that ought to belong to it, Like, for example, me treating you with respect and dignity and not killing you, who are an innocent human being. If I were to violate that order, my action would be lacking a due order in relation to you, Thomas. And so whether we're looking at physical evil, like natural evils, defects like blindness or deafness, say, or even the corruption of the tree outside, right? And when it begins to corrupt and break down, or moral evil, we see that evil is a lack of a due good. Now, we can take that knowledge and we come to see immediately that this objection from the problem of evil in relation to God as the creator falls apart or dissolves, precisely because if evil is a lack of a due good, a lack of being that ought to be there, and God's the source of all being, well then, can God create evil? And the answer is no.
Yeah, it wouldn't seem so.
We come to see that evil is not a created thing that's being brought about into existence by the creator. And so with a proper understanding of what evil is, the objection and the problem dissolves. And so evil being a part of our reality in this way would not be evidence against the all good creator. Now, I know what's going to come next as a counter argument. Well, Carlo, are you saying that blindness is an illusion and not real and part of our reality? No, I'm not saying that. Blindness is a reality, like it's real. The lack of due sight is a real part of reality. So we're not saying that evil is unreal or an illusion. We're just trying to get at the essence, if I can even say that with evil, but quote unquote essence, the true understanding of what evil is. And then once we see that, then we can see that God in principle cannot create evil because evil is not a thing to be created. That is to be had in existence.
Mm-hmm. The image that helped me understand this really well, in addition to the image of the eye and the blindness, which is excellent, but the one that really drove it home, at least as relates to God creating, is of a baker and a donut, because when he makes the donut, there's a hole there, right? But he didn't make the hole, like he didn't say, let there be hole, and a hole appeared, right? He made the donut into a ring, and then as a byproduct of that, you had a lack of donut in the middle of it. And so you could kind of draw the analogy with God. God makes things, and everything that God makes, everything that has being, is good. But as a byproduct of that, sometimes there's a lack of being where there should be some, just like there's a lack of donut where there should be some. Get rid of donut holes, please. Thank you. And that means that you know, we have evil that exists, even though you can't say that God directly caused it.
Well, I would say God cannot create it because it's not to be created or a thing to be given, a thing that would have existence to be given from God, the creator. Mm-hmm. And so this is how we can resolve this apparent incompatibility between God, all good creator, and evil, quote unquote, existing. You see how that word existing can be ambiguous. So once we disambiguate that and get to a true understanding of what we mean by evil existing, then we can see that evil is not something having existence that's being created by the all good creator. Mm-hmm. Now, with regard to another example, I like the philosopher Herbert McCabe gives the example of the hole in the sock, right? Yep. We all got some holy socks, man. And that sock is lacking the wool or the cotton that is due there. And so that's sort of an image to try to get the mind to latch on to what we mean by evil. And once you understand that, again, you come to see that God, in principle, mm-hmm. cannot, quote unquote, create evil. So the existence of evil would not be a defeater of an all good creator.
Exactly. And so we've covered a lot of ground on the problem of evil. And there's one more thing there was one more objection that we could bring up here. And it's that maybe evil of itself doesn't disprove God's existence. I think you've brought forth some pretty compelling arguments to that point, Carlo. But someone could still look at all the evil in the world and say there's so much pointless evil that it seems hard for me to believe, looking at how much evil is out there. I mean, just turn on the news, right? Scroll social media for 5 minutes. It seems like there's so much pointless evil that God can't or doesn't draw any good out of, that it's likely he doesn't exist. He's not doing that.
Yeah, so there are a couple of things in response here. First of all, it's important to note that this sort of objection is not seeking to disprove the existence of God, but simply trying to provide a rational belief against God or a rational acceptance of atheism. It's likely God doesn't exist in light of all the quote-unquote pointless evils. Now, in response, I think the first thing to go after here, Thomas, is just that. The assumption that there are, in fact, quote-unquote pointless evils. Now, why would we go after that? And here's the answer. Pointless evils would exist if and only if God doesn't exist.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Because think about it. If God existed, well, then there would be no good that he could not bring about. I know that's a double negative. Let me restate it. If God existed, he would be all powerful. So that would mean he could bring about any good that he willed from any permitted evil. And remember our principle a while ago, if there is a good to be brought about from a permitted evil, then there is no injustice in the permission of evil. And so if God existed and he's all powerful, well, then we got it in the bag. He can bring about any good from a permitted evil. And so in that case, Thomas, would the evil be pointless?
No, not anymore.
It wouldn't be pointless because there's a good that the all-powerful God is going to bring about from the permitted evil. And so, but notice that evil will be pointless if and only if God doesn't exist. But isn't that what we're debating in the first place? And it is. So what this objection from pointless, gratuitous evils falls prey to is circular reasoning. So consider this, Thomas. In order to illustrate the circular reasoning, here's the basic dialectic. Why doesn't God exist? The atheist answers, because of pointless evils, at least with regard to this objection. God doesn't exist because of pointless evils. Well, why are there pointless evils? Why do pointless evils even in fact exist? Well, because God doesn't exist. Well, wait a minute. Why doesn't God exist? Oh, because of pointless evils. Well, why are there pointless evils? Because God doesn't exist. You see how we're stuck in an infinite loop here in a circle? So this objection assumes the truth of its conclusion. We call that begging the question or circular reasoning. It's assuming God doesn't exist in order to get the pointless evils, which they think is evidence against God's existence. And so whenever you have an argument that falls prey to circular reasoning, that ain't a good argument, right? Mm-hmm. And so in my estimation, this objection from what is called quote-unquote pointless evils or gratuitous evils is actually the easiest one to refute precisely because it begs the question. It's assuming the truth of its conclusion when it's trying to argue for the truth of its conclusion, namely that God doesn't exist. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot loaded into that word pointless, and you did a good job unpacking it there to show that that is the question being begged. Yeah.
Yeah. And one more point, and I know we probably have to go to our last break hour, but one thing to note here is, which I mentioned earlier in our conversation, is that for many, they conclude that the evil is pointless because they can see no good to be brought about from the permitted evil. But remember, just because we cannot see some good to be brought about from the permitted evil, it doesn't follow that there is no good, you see? And that we should expect based upon the limitations of our knowledge in relation to an infinite creator who's all-knowing and all-powerful, right? We should expect that there would be some greater good that an infinite creator willed to bring about from a permitted evil that we don't know. So just because we might not be able to see some good to be brought about from a permitted evil doesn't mean the evil is in fact pointless or gratuitous. Mm. And so that's another part of the discussion that needs to come into play and for us to be aware of. But again, this is getting to what you just stated, Thomas, you know, that all-important phrase there, pointless evils, right? Once we think about that and what that logically entails, we can see how this objection has no persuasive force against the existence of an all-good God.
Well, as Carlos said, we are coming up on the final break of this hour. Before we get to it, I just want to remind you all that we are barreling down on the Catholic Answers Conference happening in about a month and a half now, the end of September 25th to 28th. That weekend, we will welcome some of the nation's most brilliant, eloquent, and engaging Catholic speakers, including Dr. Carla Broussard, who is joining us right now, who you just heard give some great answers to some atheist objections. And the theme of our conference will be Go Make Disciples. It will be how we can live out our Lord's call to preach the gospel to all nations. That's a daunting task for some of us, present company included, but a weekend here in San Diego at this conference will equip you and give you a good old shot of motivation to carry that mission out with joy. So, as I said, Carlo will be one of our speakers. Also, our keynote will be Chris Stefanik. We will also welcome Dr. David Anders from EWTN's Call to Communion. Just added, Dr. Amy Hamilton. We'll also welcome Steve Dawson of our good friends at St. Paul Street Evangelization, Father Paul Check, Catholic Answers Live host, and today's absentee, Cy Kellett, and all of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists, including Dr. Carlo Broussard. You can still use promo code EARLY, E-A-R-L-Y, EARLY at checkout to save $50 off of your conference ticket at CatholicAnswersConference.com. That is those three words altogether, CatholicAnswersConference.com. Book your tickets now. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 off of your ticket. We will be right back to continue with refuting atheist arguments right after this.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
With only $200, a garage turned studio, and little else, EWTN founders Mother Angelica launched what is now the world's largest religious media network. As we prepare to celebrate EWTN's 44th anniversary, we are reminded of Mother Angelica's bold faith, the power of the gospel, and the incredible support of our EWTN family who make this mission possible. God bless you and thank you, Mother Angelica.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Social media manager at Catholic Answers, Thomas Graff. That's what I do, that's my name, and I am filling in for Cy Kellett today. As he vacations to Boston, he will be back with us on Wednesday. In the meantime, we are continuing with our refutations of the strongest atheist arguments with my good friend, colleague, Dr. Carlo Broussard, joining us all the way from Oklahoma to take on these pesky atheist arguments. And we just got through dealing with, I think, about as thoroughly as one possibly can, the strongest of the strong atheist arguments. Not a pesky one at all. Definitely one that needs to be grappled with, the problem of evil. And we did cover a lot of ground, but Eric in Fort Worth, Texas, who is watching on YouTube, has been waiting patiently on the lines. He called in while Carlo was going through some of those answers to the problem of evil. And Eric doesn't want to give his own two cents, maybe a follow-up question to those arguments that you were giving. So, Eric, do we have you?
Hi, is this Dr. Carlo?
Yes. How can I help you, buddy?
Yeah, hi,
what you got?
Hi, how's it going?
All right.
Yeah, so 2 points I was calling in for. One, all the arguments that you gave for the problem of evil can also be given for the problem of worshiping a devil. There is no, all you got to do is change God for devil and you can have the exact same argument. And as for the gratuitous part of things being viewed as evil or unknown reasons, they're being viewed as evil because the sentient creatures have been being affected by the actions of this God. The God didn't bother to inform them and educate them as to the reasons why. And also the God didn't bother to ask for their consent to be part of this experiment. So if you kill your son for a good reason, for a future good reason to help your daughter, you're still a murderer for killing your son.
Okay.
And also the the bullet points here are also bringing up the idea of addressing atheism. Atheism isn't something that exists. It's a man-made enemy that you guys invented.
Okay. All right. So there's a lot here, Eric. So let's see if we can take one out of time, one at a time. So with regard to your first point, with regard to the arguments that I gave could justify, as I heard you, if I heard you correctly, worshiping the devil, is that what you said?
Yeah, the exact same moral excuse that you give for the immoral actions of this God or the moral assessment of this God for allowing evil. You could just argue that it's the devil, and you don't have to change anything at all about anything you said.
Well, why would that be the case? How would it be that I could just input the devil and the same line of reasoning would imply, would follow?
For the example that I gave, you just gave the perfect excuse on how to justify murdering your son for a future
okay.
good for your daughter.
Okay. All right. So
you're
I see you're connecting
your
those two things. Okay. Good point.
Yes.
Now, with regard to
consent from moral assessment.
Okay. With regard to that example of me killing my son, say, to somehow bring about a greater good for my daughter, the problem there, Eric, would be that that particular action of taking the life of an innocent human being would indeed be an evil in and of itself. The greater good that I as an agent would seek to bring about would in no way make that particular activity good, because the activity, first and foremost, right out the gate, is already of itself intrinsically evil. And so if you're going to apply that to God and say, well, this particular effect that God permits or even causes cannot be justified for some greater good to be brought about, you would have to shoulder the burden of proof in order to show that that effect is intrinsically evil, which even an all good God could not bring about. Now, my arguments earlier, Eric, were attempting to show that the permission, not the direct causation or even indirect causation of moral evil, is not contrary to God's goodness, but is consistent with the nature that he created us with. So that was my argument, that the permission of the moral evil, that the permission of the physical evil is not intrinsically wrong or contrary to the goodness of a moral agent. Now, you may disagree with that, and we could have a back and forth conversation as to whether the permission of a moral or physical evil by a moral agent is intrinsically wrong. But your argument would succeed, namely, that you cannot appeal to a greater good to justify some behavior. That argument would succeed if and only if God's permission of moral and physical evil is in fact intrinsically wrong. There you would have a direct one-to-one correspondence of the example you gave, where me taking the life of an innocent human being to bring about a greater good, it doesn't work precisely because taking the life of an innocent human being is of itself intrinsically wrong. So further conversation would have to be had on that score concerning, again, getting to that initial question, which I've already addressed, whether God's permission of moral or physical evil is intrinsically contrary to goodness. I presented arguments earlier that they are not, that such permission is not contrary to goodness. And so therefore, it's not intrinsically evil. And if that is true, then your appeal to the example wouldn't work. Any thoughts in response?
Yes, you've removed the moral assessment by the person that was affected by the evil action that that God did to that person. If you murder me, you are an evil person or a deity or a devil or anything like that. I wasn't informed of your strategy for me to be educated on that process, and then I can consent to go along with that plan. So you removed giving me enthusiastic informed consent in the process. That makes you a murderer by definition. It doesn't matter if you created me. It doesn't matter if you're the moral reference point of where morality comes from. You murdered me without my consent, and it seems like your moral system is removing consent in your moral assessment, which is a broken moral system.
Yeah, so one thought in response there, Eric, would be even if you were to consent for me to take your life, it would still be immoral for me to take your life, precisely because our consent is not the end-all, be-all, and final arbiter of good and bad behavior. It's our nature that determines that, and that nature came from the Creator. And so that would be sort of the heart of the conversation moving forward. But thank you for your call, man.
Thanks for your call, Eric. Unfortunately, as you can hear, the music is starting, and so we will have to bring that conversation to a close. Sorry that we got you right at the end of the hour there. But we would welcome another call later that we could continue the conversation on. It's been a great first hour talking with you, Carlo, about arguments for atheism. And we are going to continue that very same conversation on the other side of this break. You ready to do it?
Let's do it, man.
All right. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back after this break to continue addressing the strongest arguments of atheism.